Over the river and through the woods to grandmother's house we go. The horse knows the way to carry the sleigh through the white and drifted snow. Oh! Well, it's a idyllic way to think about Christmas, isn't it? And we love it. I mean, think of it. A picture of a family kind of tucked in all together in the sleigh, and they got their mittens on and their scarves on, and there's this wonderful horse that knows how to get to grandma's house, and the sleigh glides along through the powdery snow, and it never gets stuck, and it arrives at grandma's house, and you walk in, and oh, there's a fire in the fireplace, and hugs from grandma for everyone, and oh, that fresh pumpkin pie coming out of the oven. It doesn't get any better than this. That's what we love to imagine. A wonderful destination and a good journey to get there. Maybe one of the reasons we like that little piece of poetry is because it's the way that life ought to be. That we would envision all of life as traveling toward this wonderful destination and having a journey that's pleasant and peaceful and blissful along the way. But our world is not much like that, is it? Instead, in our world, the horse can barely get up, and the sleigh seems to be broken, and the snow, instead of powdery, has drifted into barriers, and we're not even sure grandma's house exists anymore. As followers of Jesus, we believe that there is a kingdom that will be on this earth, a kingdom where there will be the rule of God present here, with peace and joy. And yet it doesn't seem we're making much progress toward that kingdom. I'm not sure how you get your news in the morning, whether you get up and turn on the television, or perhaps you wait till you get in the car and turn on a news station. Maybe you get on the internet. Maybe you check on your phone. But regardless of your news source, you will likely hear bad news tomorrow. Maybe it will be about a hurricane or a typhoon hitting some part of the world. Maybe an earthquake that will send thousands to their death. Maybe you'll hear news of new famine statistics from a part of the world where children are going to bed hungry and many are dying. The news you hear will be bad news. And it will make us wonder if that destination is really going to happen. It breeds in us a sense of uncertainty that we're really on a journey to this kingdom of God on earth. And such uncertainty brings us doubt, and with doubt, perhaps even fear. Granted, most of us don't wake up every morning kind of in a panic. We're actually too consumed with ideas of got to get food on the table and make it to work on time and take care of the kids and take care of school and take care of daily life. But deep down, there is this gnawing sense of uncertainty that can eat away at us. It is unnerving that this destination that we believe we should be headed toward is not really happening. How do we face a future that seems so uncertain? How do we travel a road as believers toward this kingdom that we really can't see very clearly today? I'm going to answer those questions this morning, and I'm going to suggest that the text that we look at has three ways to face the future, three companions, you might say, as we travel along this road toward the future that God has for us. There's something to expect, and then something to envision, and then something for us to do, a companion of expectation, a companion of vision, and a companion of action. And we're going to turn to a text where we'll meet the disciples who have just heard some very, very bad news. And they're going to turn to Jesus and say, hey, what's the future hold for us? They want to know where it's all going. And Jesus will answer their question and then some. Because not only will he tell them where they're going, he will tell them how it is they should face a future that is filled with uncertainty. What Jesus says to the disciples is encouraging for them and for us as well. We're in Matthew 24. I invite you to turn there as we break in on our story with the disciples and Jesus walking out of the temple. And we start with this question that they ask. And then the heart of what we want to look at is the reply that Jesus gives. So the story sets up in Matthew chapter 24, verse 1, like this. Jesus left the temple and was walking away when his disciples came up to him to call his attention to its buildings. Do you see all these? He asked. I tell you the truth, not one stone here will be left on another. Every one will be thrown down. I'll stop there for a second. This is like, say, mid-1990s, when a businessman is walking with a friend down to Manhattan, and they look up at the 110 stories of the World Trade Center, and the sun is gleaming off the glass, and it is the most amazing structure, the center of commerce, the center of activity, the heart of U.S. business. And the friend says to the businessman, who's full of admiration for this structure, one day, every glass pane will be broken, and that structural steel will be melted, and this building will fall in ruin. And you can imagine the stunned look on the face of the businessman. That's what the disciples feel. As Jesus tells them that their temple, with its tremendously large stones and gold-covered rocks and filled with the altars and the articles for worship, that it will be destroyed. And so when they get together, when the disciples get together with Jesus, they ask him about this event. They say in verse 3, as Jesus was sitting on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately. Man, tell us, when will this happen? And what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age? The disciples are pretty convinced that there's a connection between this destruction of the temple and the coming of Jesus and the end of the age. It's all going to be wrapped in here together. And they're confused and excited and wondering what's going to happen. So basically they're asking, how do we face this future? How do we face a future of such uncertainty when the thing we counted on most, the temple, is going to be gone? So their question is a lot like ours. And it is to this that Jesus gives them three ways to face the future. And he says to them, first of all, to expect a turbulent journey. Expect a turbulent journey. You can anticipate a rough ride. A bumpy road is what is in store for you. And he explains that over several verses. Actually, he kind of divides the journey up into two legs. So there's a leg of the journey that we'll talk about first in verses up to verse 14, and then a second leg where things get even rougher. So let's see what Jesus says to them. Chapter 24, verse 4. Notice how bumpy the road will be. Jesus answered, "Watch out that no one deceives you. For many will call in my name, claiming, 'I am the Christ,' and will deceive many. You'll hear of wars and rumors of wars, but see to it that you are not alarmed. Such things must happen, but the end is still to come. Nation will rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom. There'll be famines and earthquakes in various places. All these are the beginning of birth pains. Then you'll be handed over to be persecuted and put to death. You'll be hated by all nations because of me. At that time, many will turn away from the faith and will betray and hate each other. And many false prophets will appear and deceive many people. Because of the increase of wickedness, the love of most will grow cold. But he who stands firm to the end will be saved. And this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in the whole world as a testimony to all nations. And then the end will come. In these few words, Jesus basically says to his disciples and to us that we are to expect a turbulent journey, a rough ride, a bumpy road. And look at some of the ways he describes it in this first leg. In verse 5, he speaks of deceptions so powerful that they'll make you want to move away from following King Jesus. Verse 6, wars and rumors of wars. Verse 7, there is the turbulence of famines and earthquakes. Persecution and death is spoken of in verse 9. And in verse 10, the suffering is so great. He speaks of people who give up their faith completely. There's apostasy, it says in verse 10, speaking of turning away from the faith and betraying and hating each other. People who loved one another are so inundated by suffering, he says, they'll turn away and their love grows cold. Now, what are God's people to make of this turbulent journey? It's terrible. How do you assess it? Jesus says this, that's not the end. That's not the end. That's the normal. Notice in verse 6, he says, such things must happen. That's the way life is. The end is still to come. In verse 8, he describes it as the beginning of birth pains. What is to be born is the rule of God upon the earth. But from the day of Jesus to that day, life is filled with pains of labor. You see, these are the normal catastrophes that happen when the kingdom of God is not fully ruling the earth. And when the disciples encounter this, when we encountered it, we're not to think, oh no, the end has come. That's just what happens when chaos reigns. This is a picture of anti-kingdom. This is not the way it ought to be. But this is the way it is. And Jesus says, expect it. Expect it. Don't be surprised. Don't be alarmed. But that's only the first leg of the journey. It gets worse. In fact, in the following paragraph, if this first paragraph is the early pains of labor of carrying a child, you get to that second paragraph and we find a climax. It's like the contractions that cause a woman to cry out in great pain, because these same phenomena become increasingly intense in the last days. Verses 15 through 25. So, therefore, he says, when you see the standing in the holy place, that would be the holy place of the temple where sacrifices are given, and it is the place that the priest would go to approach God. In that holy place, when you see the abomination that causes desolation, we'll come back and talk about that, spoken of through the prophet Daniel, let the reader understand. Then let those who are in the Judea flee to the mountains. Let no one on the roof of his house go down to take anything out of the house. Let no one in the field go back to get his cloak. Run quickly, he says. How dreadful it would be for those days for pregnant women and nursing mothers. Pray that your flight will not take place in winter or on the Sabbath. For then there will be great distress, unequaled from the beginning of the world until now, and never to be equaled again. If those days had not been cut short, no one would survive. But for the sake of the elect, those days will be shortened. At that time, if anyone says to you, look, here's the Christ, or there he is, do not believe it. For false Christs and false prophets will appear and perform great signs and miracles and deceive even the elect, if that were possible. See, I have told you ahead of time. This is a turbulent journey on steroids. This is an escalated level of suffering that is unprecedented on planet Earth. It is so often called the period of great tribulation, and it is certainly a time of terrible trouble for our world. Jesus describes it with several phrases that I want to draw to your attention very briefly. The abomination that causes desolation. That just sounds bad, even if we don't know what it is, right? It is the idea of someone, an antichrist, a figure who's great, very powerful, who comes into the temple itself, or at least the place where God is most directly worshipped, and basically blocks the worship of God. He makes a mockery of it, called an abomination, a complete ridicule of God, and the result will be desolation of the temple. This has happened in the past. And the way I understand this text is not only has it happened in the past, in small form, it will happen in even greater measure in the days ahead. He blocks the way to worship. It is a time, he says in verse 21, of great distress. First part of verse 21. It's unprecedented. The text says unequaled from the beginning of the world until now. Now think of that. The flood. The exile. The destruction of Jerusalem. Pale in comparison to this event. Unprecedented suffering. Uncontrolled loss of life. Verse 22, if those days had not been cut short, no one would survive. This is a plague that is unstoppable, except for God himself. And deception that is so great because of signs and wonders from the false prophet that many are led astray and none can resist. Jesus says to his disciples, expect a turbulent journey ahead. Reminds me of setting out on a hike up a mountain. I mean a real mountain, not the kind we have here in Texas. I mean those 14ers or 15,000 or 16 or 17,000 types. Many of you probably haven't tried that, but you've seen it on television. You can start off from the parking lot with a backpack, and the path is nice and smooth. And, there's a few loose pebbles that make your foot slip just a little bit. And maybe you step in a puddle and your feet get wet. And the wind turns to the north, and it just gives you a little bit of chill. But it's not bad. And then as you start moving up, the trail begins to get more ascent, a higher ascent. Greater tilt upward. And the little stones become bigger stones that you have to go around or try to climb over. And the sun disappears behind the clouds. And then you have to cross a stream and you get soaking wet. And the wind now has this really chilling effect. And the pack that seemed so light when you started is now so heavy that you find yourself straining to lift it. And then as you get above the tree line, life gets more difficult. Closer to the summit, the trail is covered with snow, and instead of having a few branches, you have fallen trees that, just before you cross the tree line, the trees are down and the rocks are huge, and progress is slow. The moisture that was in your boots is now frozen stiff. Snow is packed to your eyelids and your hair, and the air is so thin that every breath is labor. And with every step, you have to stop and rest. The closer you get to the summit, the more difficult the journey. It's the picture that Jesus paints here. That there is a challenge in the journey all through our lives. And yet that's not the end. Expect it. It gets worse for those who get closest. I imagine that the disciples were quite stunned as they heard this. But it's not just for them. It's for us as well. I find it fascinating that we live in a world where so many would think that we can improve it with enough effort, enough energy, enough money. I don't mean just improve it. I mean bring in the kingdom kind of improvement. So we have an organization, actually 100 organizations have come together to eradicate world hunger. Enough food for everyone. That's the name of the organization. It's got Bill Gates' money and the spiritual inspiration of Desmond Tutu. And it does a lot of good. It's wonderful. Except to create an expectation that one day we will eradicate hunger. There's an organization that tries to rid the world of AIDS. Another that has worked for 43 years to rid the world of cancer. Those are great organizations. And really, Christians should probably be on the forefront of those, because we'll eradicate those diseases? No. We will have trouble. But because of a different reason. Because we anticipate what Jesus will do. There will continue to be hurricanes like the one in the Philippines and earthquakes that kill thousands like in Haiti. And we hate these things. Let's be clear. It's evil. It's terrible. We do not want them, and we ought to strive to work against the chaos. But we do so with a realistic understanding that says we expect a life of hardship, a turbulent journey. That's what Jesus said. So there's what we expect. There is another way that Jesus wants his people to face the future, and that is something to envision. He wants us to not only expect a turbulent journey, but to envision that that turbulent journey will end with his glorious reign on the earth. The journey ends with the glorious rule of Jesus. Verses 26 through 31. This is good. So if anyone tells you, verse 26, there he is, that is the Messiah, out in the desert, do not go out. Or here he is in the inner rooms, a secret Messiah, do not believe it. For as lightning that comes from the east is visible even in the west, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. Wherever there is a carcass, there the vultures will gather. One brings the other. Immediately after the distress of those days, the sun will be darkened, the moon will not give its light, the stars will fall from the sky, and the heavenly bodies will be shaken. At that time, the Son of Man will appear in the sky, and all the nations of the earth will mourn. They will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of the sky with power and great glory. And he will send his angels with a loud trumpet call, and they will gather his elect from the four winds, from one end of the heavens to the other. Can you envision this? That's what Jesus wants, is that for us to be able to see this day when the world will see the universal reign of Jesus, and it is glorious. It speaks here of this kind of shaking of heavenly powers. I take it this description about the sun being dark and the moon not giving its light and the stars will fall from the sky in verse 29. It's this cataclysmic rattling of the heavens, maybe the bodies of the sun, moon, the stars themselves, of earth's structures. Everything goes topsy-turvy when this event happens. In fact, it reverses. Earlier, we have the mourning of the persecuted believers. Here, it's the nations who mourn because they see him coming, the judge of all the earth. This title for Jesus, the Son of Man, is a title pulled out of Daniel. And there in the book of Daniel, Son of Man is used in the context of the one who comes from heaven to judge the earth. He comes in power and in glory, so the world will see him and shake. He comes to gather his elect, so there's vindication. There's finally that day when the followers of King Jesus will say, it was worth it to belong to King Jesus. We were not wrong. How much we need God to open our eyes to envision this. We'll see him. The Apostle John describes it this way: his head is crowned with many crowns. His eyes like blazing coals of fire. His robe is dipped in blood, and on it is written, King of Kings and Lord of Lords. He comes from heaven, mounted as it were on a white horse, a conquering king. This is the image of a Jesus who is not coming to teach in a temple. He's not coming to die on a cross, but he's coming to establish justice and bring judgment. A Jesus who will come with an iron scepter to rule his world. And we will see it. This morning, I fear our eyes are so often clouded, like the dense fog that covered our streets this morning. We don't see it. We're clouded by visions of personal success. We're fogged over by dreams of personal fulfillment. Our vision is blocked by pain and suffering. May God open our eyes to see this. He's coming. He is coming. And if indeed we have that vision, then the third way we face the future will be possible. Not only will we expect a turbulent journey, but with a vision of this rule of Jesus, we will endure to the end. You see, what Jesus is most concerned about is not that he tells the disciples or tells us all the little timeline. Here's how things are going to happen. Here's this and this and this. That's not what he does. What he really wants is our commitment, our endurance. Not just when life is easy, not when the path is smooth. He wants our endurance to the end. Did you notice as we read how he said it? Verse 4 was, watch out for false prophets that you not get taken away. Verse 13 was, stand firm to the end. Verses 16 and 17, flee to the mountains. I take it so that you're not deceived by those powerful deceivers in Jerusalem. Verse 23, do not believe in the appearance of false Christ. Instead, stay committed to the King. Endure to the end with full assurance that Jesus is right on schedule. Last couple verses. Verse 32. Now learn the lesson from the fig tree. As soon as its twigs are tender and its leaves come out, you know that summer is near. You know that summer is near. It only happens this time of year. Even so, when you see all these things, this suffering and famine and hardship and difficulty, you know that it's near, they're right at the door, that this time of the coming. I tell you the truth, this generation, I take it he's saying this evil kind of people, the evil, that the wickedness that pervades through all the history of time, that generation will certainly not pass away until these things happen, and then they will pass away. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will never pass away. Endure to the end with full assurance Jesus is right on schedule. He's right on schedule. How do we face the future? Well, I wish I could say, let's climb in a sleigh together and we'll glide along in the snow with our mittens and our scarves and a big smile on our faces. But that wouldn't be realistic. For you see, our journey is one of turbulence, a rough ride. But it is one where we have a vision for the King who will rule the earth in power and glory. And with that vision, we endure to the end. And so, our Father, I would ask for myself and for my friends in this room that you would strengthen our commitment, that our allegiance to King Jesus would not be weakened by disasters around us or pain or suffering or false teachers and false prophets. Give us a healthy understanding of what to expect and a clear vision of the coming of our King. For Jesus' sake, amen.